What's going on, football fans? It's me, J.R. Clark, back again with another Pound for Pound ATL Live. I will be joined live shortly by my co-host, Jonathan Holder, who had to deliver some food. You know how that goes. Had to get dinner going. Toby D is traveling with being a holiday season. That's not too uncommon. So be lighter than normal as far as our content, I guess you could say, is going. But hey, we got a win to talk about. Merry Christmas from the Pound for Pound family, from our family to yours. Hopefully y'all have had a great Christmas day. I don't know if any of y'all saw my tweet. I decided to give my little girl a puppy for Christmas, so that was great. That was a fabulous idea. Cute little tiny fluffy thing that has decided to start waking us up at 2 o'clock in the morning. I thought I was done with the whole toddler business. Guess I was wrong on that. Anyway, Jonathan is getting set up. So, hey, there he is. What up, John boy?
Doing good. I'm running late.
That's all right. Ain't no big deal. I was just telling the fine folks that I decided to get my daughter a puppy for Christmas, and how that has not been the greatest thing in the world. For the past two mornings at 2 o'clock in the morning, the dog has woke us up. I was like, oh God, I am.
That'll happen.
Thought I was done with all that. But nonetheless, hey man, we got a win.
We did. And I am super happy about that win.
And a good win at that. It wasn't like it squeaked out or anything of that nature. It was a good dominant performance. So I guess when we got that to get into, so we might as well get into it. Bradley is feeling my pain. He says puppy's on his couch as we speak. Yes, dude, it is crazy to have a little tiny dog running around again. Dude, the unexpected pee or poop has been all over the place. But it was okay. So here's the deal. We'll get into this.
It's definitely not his first dog, so I know.
No. Yeah, I'm about to say we got two other dogs, and we got one like really old dog, right? And the deal was, like, when the old dog kicked the bucket, we would get my daughter a puppy. That was the deal. That's what we were going to go with. But then, like, I was driving home Thursday evening and from work, and I was like, you know, the old dog could theoretically live another 5 to 7 years. Like, theoretically. It's only an 11- or 12-year-old dog. Little dogs, they can live up until, like, 18 or 20, right? And so I thought to myself, I said, man, I called my wife. I said, if we were good parents, I said, we would go ahead and get her a dog now because, you know, she's 7. And that way she can just grow up with the dog, you know, maybe even go off to college with the dog kind of thing. And apparently that's all I needed to say, because by the time I got home, my wife done found a dog, found the breeder, found, you know, and I was just like, dang, dude, what are you doing in a cave over there? What do you?
I like changed some things around, and it may not be the best thing for me.
It's all good. It's all good.
So I will revert back. But I thought it would. I've changed some things around in my setup because
you're
of
fine. Hey, I went to go turn my ring light on, and it died. So you know, you got the backwards hat look today.
Yeah. Well, I'm about to turn this on. See how this goes.
Yeah.
See if that's at least a little bit better.
Yeah, as long as you keep your big head right over the light, you should be all right. We'll see how it goes. Either way. Christopher says, just started watching you guys back in week 7 on the season, and I've enjoyed the channel. Keep up the great work. Well, thank you. We're glad that you decided to stop in and watch. Wallace says, what's going on, fellas? What's happening, Wallace?
Man, just trying to recover.
Dude, hello. Woon says, rise up, pound for pound family. Great win on Sunday. My question is, what happens if we win out? I would say if we win out, like especially if it's in a fashion the way we won on Sunday, I would imagine that the coaching staff comes back. I know a lot of people aren't going to want to hear that. They have made up their mind and have decided that like the coaching staff is the problem, that Arthur Smith is the problem, and that he needs to be replaced. But if you win out, regardless if we get into the playoffs or not, because unfortunately now, because of losing to Carolina and losing to Tampa Bay and losing to, you know, the Cardinals and Washington, the dumb losses that we've had this year, it's no longer in our control, which sucks, you know, and that sucks. But we do know that it's not playoffs or bust. I never thought this year was playoffs or bust. I felt like it was, you had to show improvement. You can go back to the early offseason, and that's, you know, was what I was saying, is that we have to show improvement. And there have been brief glimpses, but they hadn't been consistent enough throughout the season. So depending on how these next two games go, and especially depending on what they look like in the process, like, I don't even think it has to be a win per se. As long as you don't go out there and get embarrassed by only scoring a touchdown.
Yeah.
You know, that's, to me, that's problematic.
Well, and I would say the same thing. Like, you know, people are like, if we went out, do, you know, what do we think we're going to do? And I'm just like, I don't even think we need to win out. I think that if they play, if they do win out, for sure they're coming back.
Oh yeah.
It doesn't matter what happens in the division. Doesn't matter what happens in any particular playoff games we're in or not. They went out. Because the biggest difference, somebody's going to be like, well, you know, Brandon Staley. Well, the biggest problem there was Brandon Staley, for one, has what many people consider to be a franchise quarterback, and you're getting very little of that. The amount of talent they have on defense is staggering, and for as bad as that defense is playing, for one. And two, like, literally, what, like, a week before their crazy loss to the Raiders, the coach was asked, like, is, you know, do you think you've lost the locker room? You know, do they still, is the message still getting through? He's like, no, I think the locker room's fine. You know, because if it wasn't, we'd be getting blown out. we'd be getting our asses kicked. And then they proceed to go into, go play against Las Vegas and just get smeared. And then he's fired.
Yep.
The thing that I will say, regardless of what anybody out there thinks, regardless of what we think, the players and the whatever culture you want to say he has built up in that locker room and in the organization is strong. Because those players go out there, regardless, sometimes they don't always look like they're necessarily prepared or maybe not put in the exact right position, but you could tell there's never any quit. They're always fighting. They're trying to do the best that they can in every given situation. And I think that reflects really well on the coach. And I think Arthur Blank doesn't want to give up on a situation that looks like we're like just this close to turning the corner.
I will say this, that like Josh Gillum is like, you know, if we finish 7-10, where's the progress in 3 years? The defense is playing lights out and is still amounted to the same number of wins. There's a part of me that agrees when I say you don't necessarily have to win out or have to make the playoffs. If you are playing, like I said, I guess where I'm at is if you're not having games like you did against Carolina, you know, that was stupid. You know, that was a game that you should have sleptwalked through that one and won that game. The way your defense was playing, everything else, it was a game that you should have won. Okay. So, and there's been a handful of other games. So it all comes down to us as a fan base, you know, because Nick's throwing it up here, you know, Smith's 21-28 as head coach. And as a fan base, I think we view the first 2 years differently than coaching staffs and front offices and, you know, the owner views it. You were asking them to do a lot with next to nothing the first 2 years. So that's the thing, is like, you have to honestly answer to yourself, how do you view the first 2 years? If you view the first 2 years as, you know, oh, you should have been, you know, winning or whatever, then yes, by year three, you should have be having a better showing than what you're having. You know, I've laid it out in shows past where, you know, the first 3 years of a head coach's tenure, if you're not winning double digit games by 3 years, the history doesn't like bode well, you know, for that head coach. But now I'd have to go dig in further in a modern football era. How many of those coaches also had like staggering cap, you know, hit, you know, staggering number of not being able to maneuver and do what you want to do free agent wise. I don't know. Right.
Because a lot, if you think about it, a lot of those places that end up with firing their head coaches after 3 years, when that coach comes in, like, they have like $50, $60, $70 million to play with. They can kind of reshape the team to what it, to right, what they want it to be. And he didn't have that luxury when he first got here. Some people call it an excuse or whatever. So.
Right. You can say what you want. Like, okay, Josh is like, you know, the Lions are a perfect example. Last year we saw flashes that they finished really strong down the stretch. This year they win the division with two games left. What's stopping us from doing it? Okay, the biggest difference, and I'm not arguing with you in a sense, like, the biggest difference between us and the Lions right now is they made a move to go out and get a first-round caliber QB. Mm-hmm. And whether you thought Jared Goff was worth it or not, he was a first-round talent. He had helped take the Rams to the Super Bowl, all this other jazz. They had moved off of Matt Stafford, and they made a move to get Goff, okay? That's one of the bigger differences. We moved Matt Ryan, the shell of, you know, Matt Ryan, and since then we have been tending to the other parts of the team, which the front office staff has said as much. Hey, yes, we're gonna give, like, basically Ritter's our guy this year, gonna give him a shot. And I'd have to dig way back in, but somebody said something about, like, they kept bringing in the KC model, kept bringing up the KC model, right? As in building the team and then dropping a QB in. So we'll see how that works out. Because as Fred Butts put out, as much as he doesn't like Arthur Smith, he's never had what he's calling an elite quarterback. I'm willing to give him one more year. That's the thing, is like, you know, you can say, oh, well, he handpicked Heinicke, Mariota, and Ritter. But if you go to I'll give you this analogy, and then we're going to move into ballers and fallers, and then we'll get back into this. I'll give you this analogy. You know, we talk about going to the grocery store, right? And if you go all the way through the grocery store, you got a certain amount in your budget. You got $100, right? And you're trying to make a banging meal. You want to make sure everything else is great. This is your approach. Everybody's got a different approach. They get all, you know, they went out, got all the sides, all the fixings, everything else. When they got time to go get the main dish, they didn't have enough left over initially. So we got all the sides and stuff, and we're going to wait till we get paid to get, you know, the main dish. I'm not trying to make excuses. I'm trying to paint a picture.
Yeah.
Because at the end of the day, you know, what can you expect them to do with a, you know, Desmond Ritter, with a Mariota, and with a Taylor Heinicke, because those guys have a certain ceiling. I was really hoping that Ritter could get past that, because it would have been a great answer if Ritter could have been the guy, you know? So that's my point there is, but the question is, like, for most fans, they're not going to want to let Arthur Smith have another crack at a QB, because for them, that's four QBs in 3 years. You know, it's already four QBs in 3 years.
I mean, so, you were going to be getting rid of Matt Ryan after year one, regardless. I don't know.
Because part of me feels like that they were hoping to get 2 or 3 years out of Ryan. And when, you know, they didn't, and then whoever's decision it was, whether it was Blank, whether it was Fontenot, whether it was Smith, McKay, whoever, when they went chasing or got into the Deshaun Watson mix, however,
waterfalls, you're like, when they went chasing, I was going to waterfalls. The song tells us we shouldn't go chasing.
Don't go chasing waterfalls, right? But when they went down that road, and that, I think that pushed him into that QB carousel a little quicker than they wanted to. So we'll see. All right, let's get into ballers and fallers, and then we'll get back into our talking about the game and everything else. So we're going to start with Willie Dock, as we tend to do, because he is our mainstay. We appreciate that greatly, Willie. He's in chat now, but he hit this up before it even started because he wasn't 100% sure. He says, ballers Ryan Nielsen and the entire defense. Fallers Van Jefferson. Give those reps to Hodge. Honorable mentions Ebiketie and side-eye glance to Heineke. Questionable decision-making at times. Now, I put forth my ballers and fallers with the fun graphics. But as I didn't message you like I should have, I was like, oh, crap, I need to do this. Anyway, who is your baller, Jonathan? And I will show you mine.
My baller is that stupid. No, I was trying to think of some way to do a joke about how I did it last week, but nothing came to mind. So my baller is I would like, looking at that game, I would give it to I would give it probably to Zach Harrison. Guy got his second sack in as many weeks. Over the last 3 weeks, he's been much more apparent. He played in the games before that, yeah. But like, you had to really kind of, not that he was playing bad, it's just you really had to like, is he in on this play?
Right.
Okay, let's see how he does. What a bad move or whatever. This game, he's like, the last few games, he's really stood out as a guy. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, seeing him get his second sack. And I saw a comment on Twitter. Somebody was like, this guy's been so close for so many weeks. And then like, he gets second sack in 2 weeks that he basically just like fell on a tripped guy. it's like, but that's how it works. You know, you work hard. You may have like the perfect move and the quarterback just slips right out of your grasp. But if you keep working those lucky ones where you happen to be in the right place at the right time in the right situation, those are going to happen to you more often than not. And so I give him kudos for that.
Yep. That's who I went with. Zach Harrison, rookie, three sacks. He's a half a sack away from his collegiate, best in a year. He was a three and a half.
I thought it was two sacks.
No, well, unless the Pro Football Reference version of the college got it wrong, which is possible. They had him credited for 3.5 sacks last year.
No, so, I'm saying I thought he only had the two this year.
No, he's got three so far.
Okay.
Yep. So he's one sack away from like having a career year, which is great for a rookie, right? Nice. You're like, you're coming into the league and you're ascending. That's looked for, type deal. That's a good problem. Not even a problem. That's good to have.
You can absolutely see the Calais Campbell like influence.
Yes.
Cause he's using his length really well in like getting off of the blockers, like when the quarterback or the running back or whoever kind of tries to go around him. He's using that length really well, both in the run game and against the pass game.
So. Right. Somebody, I was trying to find the comment. Somebody had said something about Calais Campbell. Oh, MJ. He says, we need to hope Calais comes back next year. He said Bud Dupree too. I definitely would like, part of me feels like the reason why defense is having the success that it's having is because it has the more veteran guys on it, from Calais to Bud to, Onyemata and Ellis and Jesse Bates. Those guys are coming in and they have, experience. So I'm really, excited to see, like, I would love for some of those guys to come back next year to continue to bring some growth along to these younger guys.
I am super duper happy that we know for a fact that Onyemata will be back next year. Cause that dude, I didn't think he was going to play this weekend. So.
Oh yeah. When they announced that he was active, I was stoked for that. Cause he has been like one of the unsung beasts on this line.
Him and Bud Dupree.
Right.
Like, I didn't think either one of them were playing. And then I saw them both. I'm like, oh, hey, that's awesome.
Right. Yep. All right. Who's your father, John?
Because
this was a tough one for me. Like, yeah. I think Willie Dock's Van Jefferson is a pretty good one. If you wanted to really single out somebody, I singled out somebody, but it's not like overly damning.
I don't really know who. I really don't have a bad thing to say about just about anybody. I think I caught a glimpse of yours. So I can see why you would go that route.
It's surface level at best. Like I sat there and thought about it. Like, it's not like I thought he had a bad game. So I'll go ahead and put mine up there. I put Taylor Heinicke. And it's not that I think he had a bad game.
Yeah.
But, you know, when we're trying, one of the things that we need to do in the next like two games is cross that 30-point mark because I don't want this to be a year that, like, it's been since the 70s since we've had a game or a year where we didn't score at least 30 points one time in a game or in a year.
And, but now I'll say this: if we score 29 points every game the rest of the year, then the likelihood is that we've won the last two games of the year.
I'm not griping about 29 points over 30.
But I'm just saying, like, to me, yes, would I like to get to 30? Because it's, hey, we were able to get past 30 points. Like, that was our speed barrier. You know, we got our sonic boom out of the way, right? So I would like to do it, but like the way this defense is playing right now, I don't see either team that we got left to play this year scoring 30 plus on.
Right. But, you know, I put Heinicke on there because mainly it was all, you know, obviously just one play, but he was a tick late on a handful of throws that could have made for bigger plays or, you know, conversions, kept drives going. But the most egregious one was the was the Bijan Robinson would have been touchdown. It was a great play call. Like, for all the crap that Arthur has taken, and some most of it rightfully so, these past, you know, few weeks, it was a great play call. It was a great design. Like, Bijan was basically standing there by himself. And, you know, if Tyler throws that ball, like, he double pats it, and if he lets it go on that first one, then, you know, Bijan, who is not having to, like, do, like, some miracle toe tap, they, like you said, they should have reviewed, like, because it may have been a lot closer than was initially ruled, but he's not having to do a crazy toe tap. You know, he's catching it right at the goal line or right before the goal line and just walking in for a touchdown. So that was my criticism on for Heinicke this past game.
Yeah, and like I said, I don't know, like, Bijan the primary read?
Yeah, I'm not sitting here trying to pretend he was a primary read, but I
saw it when I saw that play happen. I knew that it was going to be like bang, bang anyways, because I knew that it looked like he threw it late, because by the time he threw it, he was already halfway to the sideline. And I'm like, ooh, that probably should have come out a tick sooner. But again, I don't know if that was his primary read or was that a check down and he was like two or three in the progression. I don't know.
Right. And I'm not, like I said, I'm not going to sit here and try to pretend that I know what the play call was or what have you. I just know that, you know, if you're the offense looked better as a whole, because if you want to say, oh, it's because it's operating under veteran presence, then that veteran should get through that stuff a little quicker, I guess is what I'm getting at. So, all right, honorable mention time. And honorable mention, I got Jesse Bates and Bijan Robinson. Jesse Bates with another interception. Absolutely just, you know, dominating again. I think that makes, what, six on the year?
Yep,
for Bates. And then Bijan with, what, 120 or 130-something all-purpose yards?
It was 122, I think. 123, something like that. It was in the lower 120s.
Yeah, okay. Yeah,
overall.
So, yeah, the you know, all-purpose yards, like Bijan is starting to really settle in as a focal point of the offense. Like as we had said weeks ago, it should have been all year Bijan, Kyle Pitts, and Drake London as your focal point with, you know, Tyler Algier and Cordell Patterson, you know, as your auxiliary players. And you finally saw that really working well on Sunday. So that is
had a couple big runs. Like the only other person I would put in here, if I was given the opportunity, I would have put in Ebiketie, because the guy shows up on the stat sheet again. He's a weekly mention nowadays. Like we're starting at the beginning of the year, he was getting snaps, but we weren't seeing, even from the snaps that he was getting, we weren't necessarily seeing the flash, right? If you looked into the stats, you were seeing the substance, right? But you weren't seeing the flash,
right,
of what he was doing. Now we're getting both the substance and the flash. And I mean, I haven't looked at snap count, so, and that's not necessarily something that I look at all the time, but I imagine like over the course of the year, his snap count percentage has probably gone up.
I would think so. Cause you're also getting higher snap counts for like guys like Clark Phillips and guys like, DeMarco Hellams. Like these guys are getting, like Hellams is pretty much replaced Richie Grant, as your, second safety out there. Grant is now coming in on like the three safety looks, letting him be closer to the line of scrimmage, which
he's got he's got some good pass rush moves too.
Right.
He had a sick swim move on I think it was a back running back that was trying to block him. He had a nice swim move to get back there and get the sack.
Right. He is showing a knack at playing closer to the line of scrimmage. So he may have, you know, kind of like Isaiah Oliver, he may have found his home there. Now, you know, if I'm assuming like
apparently not, he's been benched.
Well, Oliver, yeah. I'm talking about when Oliver was here.
Yeah.
I know out there in San Francisco, he reverted back to his old ways and was getting torched a little bit. But yeah, guys like, you know, Clark Phillips is, you know, pretty much replaced Jeff Okuda, which kind of sucks because you traded a fifth for Okuda. You're hoping he was going to come in and regain his like first round status and be opposite AJ, giving you either a Robin to AJ's Batman, or in the shrewd business world that is the NFL, leverage on if AJ wanted to play hardball. But with him getting benched like his snaps getting cut dramatically for Clark Phillips, that may not happen. He may not be here next year.
Yeah. You know, I think the Okuda thing was more of a, we bring him in. Yeah. It costs us a fifth, but it's a fifth, right? It's not a second or third. It's a fifth. We had multiple fifths to give. So we got rid of one fifth. We brought in Jeff Okuda. He did pay dividends early in the season in two ways. One, you didn't have to rush out, Clark Phillips, you know, he didn't have to just get put in the fire day one. So he was allowed to develop and what have you. And on top of that, he was just he played really well earlier in the season. As the season's gone on, and you know, maybe some of that's down to he did have a little bit of an injury. So maybe since the injury, he's kind of fallen off a little bit because of said injury. I don't know. But either way, it has been timed up pretty well so that Clark Phillips has now had the time to develop, get in, you know, get used to the NFL routine. Plus, being a rookie, just like with Bijan, is, you know, you finished out the season in college, went right into training for the combine, went right into training for your pro days. Then you go right into OTAs. Then you go right into training camp. So, like, there's really not a break that they've gotten, a true off season. So early in the season, he doesn't play nearly as often. So maybe by the time get to the end of the season, he's not, you know, there's no danger of him hitting the rookie wall kind of situation. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that it paid off in a couple of different ways that were really good. He could still be brought back, but maybe at a lesser salary, and I'd be totally fine with that. But I do think that going forward, I think the likelihood is Terrell is your number one. You pay him as your number one, and Clark Phillips is your number two. And, you know, but that way you're paying big money for one guy and not big money for two guys. And that gives you a little more flexibility as you go forward. So.
Yep. Let's see. Somebody was asking, hold on. Where did it go? Where did it come from? Where did it go? Where did it come from? Cotton Eye Joe. All right. Fred says, JR, if Arthur Smith is the head coach next year, do you think he lets Ritter continue to develop or if he gives up on him? I honestly think, like, it's hard for me to say definitively. To me, I think part of the contingent of him coming back is we have to get a stable QB. So, because if you were going to let him develop, you wouldn't bench him. Like, you wouldn't have brought you know, Heinicke in at all after that game. He's made, you can call him rookie mistakes, you can call him whatever you want to call him, but in this day and age in the NFL, when we don't have time to wait around, nobody is being patient. Like, nobody is, right?
You don't have time to wait around for a third round pick.
That's what I was gonna in a guy that you don't have any investment in, realistically, money wise, draft capital. You don't have any reason to stick with him. And I could easily see them going out. But what scares me in the sense of bringing Arthur back and not like fully hitting the reset is Fee has a good game this past game offensively. And then the next two games, say offensively, they do well. I'm not even saying winning or losing. I'm just saying they do well. Because, you know, as we see it right now, you know, Tyler did enough, you know. So let's say that he does that for the rest of the season. We split them. We go two, you know, 1-1, so 2-1 through this whole stretch. You decide to bring Arthur back. The biggest thing that bothers me or that scares me is him then being able to convince somebody that, okay, you should get me a veteran quarterback. And so the veteran quarterbacks on the market, possibly the best out of all the scenarios, veteran-wise, to me, is Kirk Cousins, as you brought up before. I don't like that idea. I think Cousins is a fine QB, but as you have seen, like, you know what he gives you. Like, he gives you competent play, but is competent play going to be enough to get you over the top, right? He's had some pretty good teams up there in Minnesota. You can argue he didn't have great coaching with Zimmer, but, you know, they had decent enough teams. Then my other concern is Tannehill. Like, I don't want Tannehill here in Atlanta, and that would be an easy sell. Like, what got Arthur the job was how that offense played, you know? And so unless you wanted to do something like, I know the timeline, and we'll have plenty of time in the offseason to, you know, scream about it or what have you. But, you know, if you think that you know, you can get Fields for next to nothing from Chicago. To me, there's still some upside there. I don't think you've seen a finished product with Fields yet.
I think unfortunately his price tag probably has gone up with his play the last few weeks. So I think he's out of there. Whether
I think
it's
he is
to
too.
Atlanta, I think they're going to go in a different direction. But at the end of the day, I think that Fields, his price tag's probably gone up a little bit. I'm not sure it goes up to like a two. Look, but
I would, if you end up with a second two from the Ridley trade, you know, if they sign him and that gets bumped up to a two, right now it's sitting at a three, but if it gets bumped up to a second round pick, I would be willing to trade like a second, a fifth, and then maybe a fourth next year. You know, some kind of like, you know, mid-tier pick, low pick, and then something next year for Fields, because now you're looking at Fields still being able to pick up his fifth-year option, I believe. So then you're looking at least next year and the year after before you have to make a like major decision on whether you're paying him or not. But it's either that or you grab, you know, Jaden Daniels or J.J. McCarthy, because you're going to be probably in the range of one of those guys. Because McCarthy can improve his stock, you know, in the playoffs like Stroud did last year. Because at this time last year, there was a relatively big question mark on Stroud. And then he went and played Georgia and silenced all that.
Yep.
So McCarthy can, you know, pick his stock up. Yep. So can guys like Michael Penix can pick his stock up. So we'll see. We'll have to see how that goes.
Biggest problem for Penix, I think, is going to be his injury history. And then also he's not really a mobile guy. No,
he's kind of a statue back there.
Yeah.
And so – like he solves the problem with his arm, not with his legs. And the game is moving towards being able to answer it with both, you know, your arms or your legs. But see, that's the thing, is like Fields is going to be like that. This is a pretty good statement there. It's like, no, I don't want Fields. It's got a funny feeling that Arthur is going to go after Tannehill because he was his QB in Tennessee. I think the injury history hopefully will keep them out of the Tannehill deal, because he seems to miss some games every year.
I think at best Tannehill is brought in as a backup.
Well, see, yeah, but I don't, like I said, I just don't feel like it's here. You know, I feel like Tannehill might be brought in at like in New York or something like that.
I can see them if he would be willing to take it. I could see him. Like us trying to get him on maybe a Taylor Heineke level deal.
Yeah.
And have him be the backup, kind of like break in case of emergency kind of situation.
Yep. But you got to wonder if he's willing to, like, he was willing to accept that when he went from Miami to Tennessee, but then he's turned into an average or above average QB up there in his time in Tennessee. So, who knows if he's willing to take that step backwards. True Black says, late to the party, but I'm here. Merry Christmas. Merry Christmas to you.
Merry Christmas, man.
That's right. I hope all y'all had a great Christmas. I really do.
Absolutely.
We appreciate y'all taking time out of y'all's day and come hang with us. Ghost Pepper says, why would the Bears trade Fields? If it's because he's not good enough for them, why would he be good enough for the Falcons? This is where you get into the business side of it. Now, if they're not 100% sold, because you got to think, this GM and this coach is not responsible for bringing Fields in. Okay. So if they're not 100% sold and they want their guy, they get to reset the clock. And by trading away Fields because they have the number one overall pick because of the Carolina Panthers, you can go and get Caleb Williams, you can go and get Drake May, whichever one you're in love with, and then turn around and, you know, potentially pair him with somebody like a Marvin Harrison or whatever high caliber wide receiver or what have you, because they got two high picks, right? So then you ask, why would he be good enough for the Falcons? Okay. I've looked at it and I've tried to be objective as I can be here. All right. Because there's this statement that follows up. If Smith wanted Fields, he would have drafted him. Okay. I've seen that a lot. All right. So let me ramble on about this for a second. When Smith got here 3 years ago, different ballgame. You had Matt Ryan in tow. You felt like maybe you could squeak out a few years with Ryan. You give him an elite weapon such as Kyle Pitts. You were really hoping it was going to be Kyle Pitts and Julio Jones, and then Julio wanted out. And then Calvin wanted out. So, like, you went from having what was going to be this dominant offense to
Kyle Pitts.
Yeah, Kyle Pitts. Okay. So, if they could go back and do it again, knowing what they know now, would they have drafted Fields? I can't say no, but I can't say yes. Like, I really feel like if they were like, okay, it's Kyle Pitts or Justin Fields, and if we grab Justin Fields, he can sit for a year to learn behind Matt Ryan, because Matt Ryan's going to want to bounce at the end of the year anyway. Like, that may be a different scenario. Mm-hmm. So when you say, is he, you know, why would he work here? If you look at the way Justin plays the game, especially this year, he seems like a more talented version of what you're asking Ridder to do. Yeah. Deep balls, you know, getting out of the pocket, extending, that kind of stuff. The stuff that you're asking Ridder to do, Fields seems like a better version of that, right? That's just what I see. That's just my opinion. So if they had it to do all over again, giving all the information that they had, would they have drafted Fields? I can't say that they wouldn't have. I can't say that they would have, you know, stuck with Kyle Pitts at that point. So I don't know. So that's my thought. What, Jonathan?
I do think that in the right scenario, there is potential for Justin Fields. Now, I will, like, the people that are like, you bring in Justin Fields and he's going to turn this franchise around and this and that and the other. It's like,
still has okay, to.
Okay, so he was brought into Chicago to turn that franchise around. And yes, has he had the best coaching along the way? Not necessarily. But also, I have seen many times in film where the play is snapped, it goes out, he's got a clean pocket, has guys running wide open, and he never throws the ball, panics, runs around. Like, up until maybe the past 2 months of his entire 3 years that he's been in the league so far now, up until the past couple months, he was objectively a worse player than Ridder was. Like, just straight up. He would show, like, every year he would have maybe one game. And even within that one game, he might have a play or two where you're just like, man, that's just a feels. That's what we thought we were getting. But you never see it again.
Right.
It just, nothing ever materialized for him until this season.
Mm-hmm.
You know, until, and not even at the beginning of the season. This wasn't happening until much later in the season. So there's been nothing that says, like, Justin Fields is going to be the man when he gets here.
And that's the thing, like, to me, because, like, when you look at their side-by-side stuff, you know, the career games or this year, rather, stat-wise, they're damn near on par for each other. You know, what you're getting out of Fields is a better runner, you know, in the open field. You know, so the design runs may net you more, right? Ritter's had more rushing touchdowns than Fields, but I think he's, you know, had more of those design runs when they got down there, where Fields has passed for more touchdowns and he's passed for less, you know, he's had less interceptions. And this is like, here's the deal. Like, and I don't blame Huckle at this junction. I know you're not trolling. That's the question, right? Whether it's a veteran rookie, I don't trust Arthur to groom them for success. Not trolling, just being honest, right? That's where the deal is. Like, where do you, as a fan base, I hate to say it like this, Arthur Smith has a long way to go to regain any kind of trust from the fan base, right? The fan base, especially this year, has really made up their mind that Arthur Smith's a bad play caller and that he's a bum, da-da-da-da-da. But here's the thing, like I said on Twitter, if you're going to highlight the bad when you have the opposing team talk about, oh, we know what they're running and da-da-da-da-da and making whatever soundbite there, then you need to bring the same energy when the opposing, you know, team says the stretch game with the play action pass, the screens. Honestly, I felt like they had a good plan today. This was from Colts linebacker Zaire Franklin, who is currently leading the league in tackles and everything right now. And defensive tackle DeForest Buckner echoed the similar sentiments. From the way Smith attacked Indianapolis' defense to the schematic curveballs he threw throughout the afternoon. So this is the other team saying, yep, schematically the Falcons had a good plan and executed. So I don't know.
Well, those are some of the same thoughts that we heard echoed by Calais Campbell, right? Mm-hmm. Like before he ever stepped on the field, like right after he signed, one of the things he talked about was like over the years of having to play Tennessee, when Arthur Smith was the offensive coordinator for Tennessee, he was like, that offense was one of the toughest offenses to get, right? Mm-hmm. To figure out. So that's what we've heard. And granted, like if you look over the past couple seasons prior to that, the offense for the most part in a lot of cases was never really the problem. It was the defense, like couldn't hold up, couldn't get plays when we needed them in a lot of cases. So the offense held up this year with a rookie quarterback, that is just not working out for whatever reason. Okay, with a rookie quarterback, things are just not working like they should, right? So now the offense is more of the issue than it has been the first 2 years. But now we have the defense, where if we'd had this same exact defense with the offense last year, we'd probably win the division. You know, but again, that's neither here nor there.
You can if and win all day long, right? I mean, yeah, honestly, like regardless of what you feel like, we should have won the division this year. We still can.
It's going to be tough. We need a lot to go our way. But
look, if Tampa wins next week, they win the division.
So, I know.
Like
which yeah, for one, the one, like probably the one and only time in my life, I'm pulling for the Saints to win next week, and then somehow for the Panthers to beat them in week 18.
True Black says, I don't know. Arthur Smith's a bad play caller. I just know that he needs to stop running on third and long. He thinks no one will ever see it coming, but everyone sees it. I'll say this, as folks who love to see her on the couch, me being one of them, like we all feel like we could call better games. Like we all do. Yeah. And at the end of the day, I said it earlier, I'll say it again, like the quickest way to see this team turn around is if Arthur Smith can figure it out. If they can figure out the offense and get it going, then that's the quickest way to get this team back to contention. Because if you clean house, unless somehow you can get, you know, you want to hire Joe Brady as your head coach and convince him to keep Nielsen or whatever, you have to start over again. You have to start over by getting the guys that this new staff wants. And you did that. You know what I'm saying? I don't agree. After his first 10 scripted plays, it appears Arthur Smith has no clue. I don't agree. I just nope. Look, I'm gonna put it to you like this. As much as everybody says they don't agree, and then, or you know, as they don't think he's a good schemer, most folks just say it and don't really have much to back it up with. I'm in the same boat, I guess you could say. I don't agree. There are times that I see people running wide open. The Bijan, which would have been a touchdown. We were within, you know, the red zone a handful of times in the second half and had to settle for field goals because of penalties or what have you that have derailed the play call. The play calling looks so much different when you have elite players all the way around. Oh, Shanahan's doing it in San Francisco with Brock Purdy. Yes. Brock Purdy has Christian McCaffrey, George Kittle, Brandon Ayuk, Deebo Samuel, veteran players who have been immersed in the system for a very long time. And you saw it yesterday in Purdy's four interceptions that he threw against Baltimore. Mm-hmm. So when you have good talent, an elite talent, everything looks better.
You look at Sunday in the Falcons game, and I'm not saying he's an elite talent, but he is a talent on the offense. And that is because this is the second time we see it. The first time we saw it, I mean, probably seen it a couple other times where it didn't quite do this well. But like, you throw a little screen pass out to Jonnu on like 3rd and 17 or something like that, and you pick up the first down because he's that kind of guy, you know, and you get him the ball quickly, get him some blockers, and you let him do his thing. That's what they do in San Francisco.
Yeah, in San Francisco, he pumps the ball off to Christian McCaffrey, who then is shot out like does his thing. So,
I mean, and when you look at the spray chart for Heineke, he had one really long pass, but then he had like some that were like 15 yards or what, 15, 20 yards. But a majority of that stuff was like 10 yards and under, just trying to get guys the ball, let them go do their thing. And that's what we need to do more of, because you do more of that, and then at some point it's going to suck somebody up, and then you're going to get those opportunities for the deep shots. Now you got to hit them for anybody to respect them. But at the end of the day, like the offense, that game against a red hot team.
Yeah, they had lost one game in the past six games. They were 5-1 coming into Atlanta.
Yeah, so this was like one of the hottest teams in the league comes into your place, and you absolutely dominate them by doing exactly what we thought was going to happen, which is what we did on Sunday was we passed a lot early on to try to get get a lead. We did. And once we came out in the second half, we started pounding them with the run, and we did that to perfection. And that's the kind of game that we play. If right. we can play that kind of game, we're going to win the majority of the time.
Yep. Like I said, we're going to have an off season of one or two things. We're going to have an off season of defending, so to speak, the coaching staff, their decisions, yada, yada, yada. Or we're going to have an off season of digging into a new coaching staff and what they bring.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, because we are at like a crossroads, because it's not, you know, you're not wrong, Huckle, as far as like he's never had a 3-year or a 3-game winning streak here in Atlanta. You're not wrong. As far as games went, they've done it in Tennessee when he was there. So I'm just saying that at the end of the day, it's as much about the Jimmys and Joes as it is about the X's and O's. Like right now, you go have a talk with, you know, Patrick Mahomes and the Kansas City Chiefs, and, you know, their faithful will tell you that, oh, we don't have any receivers right now. And that's the problem. Okay. Well, Patrick Mahomes is supposed to elevate everybody's play, right? And then you go talk to Philly's faithful right now. These are teams that are winning, by the way. These are teams that have already clinched playoff positions.
I don't think Kansas City has just yet.
Kansas City may not have. I know Philly has, but yeah. Like these are teams that have true Super Bowl aspirations, mm-hmm. and they're questioning what's going on with their teams.
Yep.
I bet you money if you were to turn on San Francisco's sports talk radio today after yesterday's game.
We were so exposed.
Right.
We were this, so, we were that. That's what you're going to hear.
Yep. So, as I said before, until we figure out the QB thing, then it doesn't, like, we're not going to be in contention. Right now, the vast majority of the NFL is in QB purgatory. Do you realize that Jake Browning, Tommy DeVito, I had a tweet yesterday. I need to find
it. Yeah, I saw that. It was like, here's a list of a bunch of quarterbacks that played in the NFL or something like that. Yeah, it's super crazy.
It was stupid. Like, you know, when we talk about
now, granted, Jake Browning is due to injury. Like, that's not like, hey, yeah, we're hoping this guy works out and could be the future of our franchise. They know who the future is, but
this is just what started on Sunday. Bailey Zappe, Tyler Heineke, or Taylor Heineke, Trevor Siemian, Jake Browning, Nick Mullen, Jacoby Brissett, who replaced Sam Howell, DeVito, Mason Rudolph, EJ Stick, and Joe Flacco. I mean, like right now, there's a lot of teams that are trying to figure out what they're doing at QB. The only thing I can say is at least here in Atlanta, whether it's Arthur Smith, whether it's another guy down the road, whatever, at least we ain't got a ton of money tied up into the QB position right now. Because if we were staring at Daniel Jones and the money that they just paid him, if you're staring at, you know, Jalen Hurts and the question marks that you might have about him, if you're staring at Derek Carr and the $40-something million a year you're paying him, I would much rather be in the situation we're in.
Yes.
Whether it's Arthur Smith in 24, whether it's whoever, name whatever hot guy you want to, you know, whatever hot name you think is going to come in and do the job, just know that whatever hot name that you think is going to come in and do the job has probably never been a head coach in the NFL.
Yep.
And as Huckle pointed out, oh, he wasn't a head coach in Tennessee. It's way different. Right. So whoever you think.
Neither has Joe Brady.
Right.
Neither has Ben Johnson. Neither has
Slowick. Bobby Slowick.
Neither has 90% of the guys that everybody wants because they think that they're going to be so much better. I mean, they might.
No clue, bro. Okay?
But again, you're not talking about like, oh, let's bring in Bill Belichick. Oh, let's bring in, I don't know, Kyle Shanahan somehow if we pry him away from San Francisco.
Ain't nobody trying to bring, you know, Bill Cowher out of retirement or, you know.
No.
You know, so it's just like I said, at the end of the day, sick of coordinators. That's the only place you get head coaches. Where else you get them from?
Right, but okay. So and I get that sentiment. I do because we've kind of that's what we've gone through the last three head coaches, right? Before that we had Dan Reeves, and so he had been a bona fide head coach before that, and then we brought in Bobby Petrino. Obviously that didn't work out, and then we've had a string of coordinators. And the reason why you do that is because everybody at the time was like, I don't want no retread. I don't want a guy who got fired from someplace else.
Yeah, come on, bring in Rex Ryan.
Yeah, bring it. Yeah, exactly. So nobody wanted to retread. So let's get the fresh faces in here. And Mike Smith did really well for the most part in his career. Dan Quinn started out really well. Then it kind of fell off. Art, you know, Art has had kind of the opposite of Dan Quinn, where he started off kind of slow, but he had a good reason for it. But he started off kind of slow. My hope is that he's kind of the opposite of Dan Quinn in every single way, and that is start slow, finish strong. You know,
and here's the deal.
Like, but there's no guarantee that any of the guys that we're talking about, Ben Johnson, Joe Brady, even some of the defensive guys, Mike McDonald, whoever, are guys that are going to come in and like make a difference year one.
Yeah,
could they possibly?
You know, you want to say, oh, well, look at what Ben Johnson did with Jared Goff. Okay, look at what Arthur Smith did with Ryan Tannehill.
Yep.
Like, you know, if you want to sit here and tell me, oh, look at what, you know, Bobby Sloak is doing with C.J. Stroud. Okay, look at what he's done the past few games without C.J. Stroud.
Yeah.
So is it Bobby Sloak or is it C.J. Stroud? Yeah. Like, that's all I'm trying to get y'all to understand. That's all I'm trying to get y'all to see is if, you know, if you think that running Smith out is the answer, then I would implore you to tell me what gives you the confidence. And I'm not even trying to be a smartass here. I have posed this question a handful of times to people I value and people I trust on, you know, Twitter or whatever. What confidence do you have that the guy you want is going to be the guy? And you don't, especially if they've never been a head coach. Oh, well, bring in Bill Belichick. Okay. Have you seen Belichick
without Tom Brady?
Right. Be able to succeed without a Tom Brady. Do you look at what New England has done on the offensive side of the ball these past two seasons and tell me that gives you any kind of confidence?
Yeah. And again, when he was a defensive coordinator, that guy can coach defense. He is a hell of a defensive coordinator.
Oh, dude. They shut down Russell Wilson completely. But yeah. Yeah. They shut them down completely.
Yeah.
Like, absolutely negated everything like that. And they were playing good. So.
Noah, I'm going to tell you that is.
I mean, they've already said it's not.
Yeah. I disagree with that. And Arthur Blank has come out.
Arthur Blank has already said that it's not playoff or bust. Like, they've said that. Fred says, JR, people love to blame Ritter, but if the defense held the lead in four games, we would have been 10 wins with Ritter, just like against Carolina. Okay.
You want to say against Carolina? I got to get this out there.
Yeah.
You want to say like against Carolina, that defense gave up 9 points.
Yeah. They didn't give up a touchdown. Yeah.
No touchdowns, no right. Nothing, and your offense couldn't just – now, granted, I'll say this. They did muster more points, just Koo didn't come through for them. Missed two field goals. Obviously, if we get those two field goals and the rest of the scores remain the same, then yeah, we win that game 12 to 9, I think it was, or something like that.
Yeah, it would have been something stupid.
13-9.
So. But, you know, if Ritter doesn't throw a back-breaking interception –
yeah, absolutely. Like, we would have been in line for another field goal to at least give Koo that opportunity, and that would have put us ahead by 10, and then likely they don't get a touchdown.
I'll say this. Tomlin's probably fixing to get a contract extension.
Yeah.
And what gives you the confidence that the DC, even as much as we like Nielsen, can actually run a team? Yeah. That's the point I'm trying to get y'all to.
He is just now being a true
DC,
and even then, he's splitting it with Jerry Gray.
Yeah, like, I mean, Jerry Gray is very influential.
Yeah,
in the decisions.
Yeah, so you're saying let's hire the defensive coordinator that is just this year being able to call the plays for the first time, really put together the defense, but also sharing like how that defense is put together with another guy, Jerry Gray, who's also on the staff. So. I love Ryan Nielsen, and I want to keep him whatever that takes. And I think right now the best way forward to keep him is you keep Arthur Smith. I think if you bring in a new guy, there's a very good chance that Nielsen walks and goes somewhere else because he comes in because he likes, you know, they probably know Fontenot, so they probably have that connection. But they, like from the day he got here, you could tell, like, him and Arthur Smith have a, like, they're on the same level. And you take Arthur Smith out of the mix, who's to say he even wants to play coach here anymore if it's not under Arthur Smith?
Like I said, for everybody who is in a hurry to run everybody out of town, like, it is your opinion on how you view the first 2 years. If you view the first 2 years as he had a legitimate roster to try to win, then yes, I could definitely see how you're ready to move on. You gave him 3 years, so forth. So, you know, as far as Mike Tomlin, which is kind of funny, like, this is the same organization that drafted Kenny Pickett in the first round. And Mike Tomlin has yet to develop, like, be responsible for another QB getting developed. So, you sure you can develop a QB? He hung on to Matt Canada for how long?
Yep.
So, I don't know. And Nick says, thoughts on Kirby Smart? That man ain't leaving Georgia. Why would he?
No.
Why would he leave UGA?
That's like these days asking, like, what about Saban? Maybe he wants to get another. Why?
Why?
Why would he ever leave being king of the hill?
I was about to say.
Literally, that dude is a god
in
Alabama. And same with Kirby Smart right now. He is a god in Athens.
Yeah, I mean.
Why, the NFL has nothing for you. But has nothing but disappointment at some point, because the likelihood is he's really good at coaching college football. The chances of him being able to translate that into the NFL and have success and be able to
come
anywhere close to the kind of adulation he's going to get at Georgia is so minute.
It's such a different beast from college to the pros. That's the thing. All right. We are sitting at the point where we're starting to go round and round.
I think if the team, obviously the team wins out, Arthur's back, regardless of playoffs, no playoffs, whatever.
Right.
Doesn't really matter. I think in that scenario, it's 100,000% positive he comes back. If they go 1-1, say they win against the Bears, lose against New Orleans, in New Orleans, okay? If it's a hard-fought game, okay? If it's a hard-fought game, they play really well, and it comes down to a last-second field goal or something like that, whether it's for us or them, and we miss it or they hit it or something, and we lose that game, I think Arthur Smith is back next year. I think the only way Arthur Smith is not back next year is if we somehow run into a game like Brandon Staley did with the Raiders.
I think if you have another game where, you know, like the Carolina game, if you have another game like that, where you can only muster 7 points and you're barely moving the ball, you're going 3 and out, like, that's a problem, you know. That's a major problem. If you're saying,
I'm not saying that's not the case. I'm simply saying, unless he is absolutely gets the doors blown off of him, like the team just looks like they just quit on him, like the Chargers did to Staley. Unless you see that, I don't think Arthur Smith gets fired. I think Arthur Smith is back next year because I think they really like how he runs the organization. I think they really like the emotions that are engendered by, you know, that he engenders with his players and the kind of attitude that they show. I just really think that they're gonna look at the situation. They're gonna be like, we are this close. Why throw it all away right now?
Yep.
I honestly think that. That's what I think.
We'll see. anyway, I'm tired of feeding trolls. I'm tired of trying to explain it. Y'all can watch. The vast majority of y'all have developed your own opinions, and there isn't. I hit a point where there isn't anything I could say that is going to change your mind, right?
Yeah. I just give my right. opinion, that's
if you
all,
want, like,
all
okay.
it boils down to.
Muster 7 points, okay? Rainy, horrible conditions. Then you throw a back-breaking interception. Your kicker misses a handful of points. It was going to be a nasty game. regardless.
Yeah.
Just like the Jets game was nasty because of the weather.
This wasn't just like a misting.
No, it was coming down. It was nasty. It was a driving rain to a point where tickets were being sold for a quarter because wasn't nobody going. So nasty game. That's what it was going to be. And like, you're only really able to score 7. So yeah. And Slick Nuts is like, and the Panthers have a really good defense.
Yeah. So, I mean, that is, you look back at the previous week against New Orleans, like that game against New Orleans was tight for a good chunk of that game until the very end of that game.
Go look at the game that they just had with Green Bay.
Yeah. You
know, they almost beat them. So, hey, I love all y'all. Even though we don't always agree, that's the fun of it.
Yeah.
Is that we don't agree. Not always. We're going to have a lot of different. What I do hope is that whatever transpires, if Arthur Smith comes back, I hope they add another voice to the room.
Yes.
Somebody else.
I did see somebody's comment, like, yeah. Bring in a, like, you know, make Ragone the QB coach. If you feel like maybe there's like something there, make him the QB coach. But I want to bring in somebody that doesn't think exactly the way I do.
Right. I need somebody who gives me something else.
A different perspective.
Yep. I love what Chris says here. It says, hope we play well enough Sunday to come back next Tuesday and do it all over again. Exactly. Dude, that's all. Like, at the end of the day, that's all I want. I want to win. Everybody's like, oh, you're mucking up draft picks. I don't care about draft picks. I want to win. I want to talk about a winner. Period. Point blank. All right, folks, as always, y'all can follow me on Twitter. I'm at Grimm1128, GRIMM1128. You can follow Toby at TobyD1991. Jonathan.
At Jonathan M. Holder. Come by, say hi.
There it is. As always, Falcons fans, rise up.
Rise up.